Hello, everyone. This is Betsy Wurzel. You're a host of Chatting with Betsy on Passion World Talk Radio Network, a subsidiary of Global Media Network, LLC. Our mantra is to educate, enlighten, and entertain. The views of the guest may not represent those of the host of the station. Folks, I am always excited when I have a guest with me today, and today is no exception. I have Lou Gray with me today, and I'm going to spell his name because it's a little different. It's L-L-U-E-W. That's what's different. G-R-A-Y. And he is author and writer of the book To End the Night, Julius Caesar's Secret War, which is a historical fiction novel that masterfully blends historical fact with gripping fiction. It's got great reviews on Goodreads and Amazon, and I'm looking forward to chatting. Welcome, Lou Gray, to Chatting with Betsy.
Thank you. One quick correction, though. My last name is G-R-E-Y.
Oh, G-R-E-Y. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
They have it spelled G-R-A-Y. Okay, thanks.
See that?
Yeah.
Confusion happening.
Yes, yes, thank you. So it's G-R-E-Y, folks, unless I misspelled it by accident, who knows? Thank you for correcting me. That's very important. See, folks, I don't take myself too seriously. I love it, though. I don't mind. It's important to be corrected. So thank you so much, Lou, for correcting that. And I always ask, what inspired you to write your book about Julius Caesar?
Oh,
based
well,
around Julius Caesar.
That's a lot of questions. I've been writing my whole life, but kind of just for myself. I never shared any stories with anybody or anything. And then I got the idea, probably in the mid-90s, about wanting to do vampires in a different way, a way that you didn't normally see them. So I kind of actually came up with the ideas for my vampires and their origins and all of that kind of stuff first. And I had that in my mind, and I was looking for a story, and I couldn't really come up with a good one on my own. And then I saw a documentary on Julius Caesar, and I was like, well, you know, that could work. There's, you know, if I just, sorry.
That's okay.
Hey, Tessa, Faye, thank you. I'm sorry, they get, hey.
That's okay, Lou.
They're normally quiet most of the time, but sometimes they decide they need to start talking.
That's okay. That's part of the interview.
That's right. I saw a documentary on Julius Caesar, and it kind of looked to me, based on like the documentary, saying that like, you know, his motivation for rebelling against Rome and everything was just personal pride and hubris and, you know, gravitas. And I said, yeah, I can give him a better motivation than that. It might not be the right motivation. It might not be historically correct, but I can give him a more honorable motivation. And that's how that came about. I wrote the book while I was in the military years and years and years ago. And so then when I became disabled and could no longer work, my wife was like, why don't you publish one of your stories? So I dusted off that one and sent it out to an editor and put a little bit more work in it just to, like, as a test to see what would happen. And people seem to like it, so I'm pretty thrilled.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, thank you for serving your country, number one. I love and admire all veterans, and I always thank a veteran when I see them out in the store. They look at me sometimes like I'm a little nuts, but that's okay. I want to make sure that
you know,
they are
always
thanked.
Awkward every time. Like, when I was active duty and I'd have to go someplace and I was in uniform, and people would stop me and thank me. And I always really appreciated the sentiment, but at the same time, it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, thank you for doing your job, whatever job that is. Yeah, like, I don't know what to say to that. It's always awkward.
Yeah, they could just say thank you. Speaking of thanking veterans, I just have to sidestep here with this story. I worked as a nurse. And there was a male nurse, his name was Larry, and I was reading a book about Vietnam, and he told me he was a Vietnam vet. And I said, well, thank you for going over there, and I'm sorry for how all you Vietnam veterans were treated when you came home. And he started to cry. He said, Betsy, you're the only one who ever thanked me. Can I give you a hug? I said, sure.
That's amazing.
And I felt so bad for him that no one ever thanked him. And I think it was since then, I said, you know, I got to thank a vet, especially if I see a Vietnam veteran wearing a hat, because I do feel bad for how they were disrespected. That was very shameful. But anyway, I digress.
I was treated wonderfully my entire military career. I had so many people and discounts, and, you know, I never felt, I couldn't imagine being a Vietnam veteran and going through what they went through when they came back. It's difficult enough dealing with what you deal with without being spit on by your own country when you come home. So
exactly.
Thank you for doing that. You know, I mean, that's important, that, especially the Vietnam vets that you did that.
Yes. Way. Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm 67, so I was a child when the war started and a teenager when the war ended. And, you know, I really wasn't into politics or news back then. And I didn't really realize the gravity of the situation of the war and, you know, how they were, the Vietnam vets were treated. But that is great that you started writing. And you know what? I want to just go back, Lou, because did you leave the service because you were disabled, or did you become disabled after you left the service?
I left the service. I was allowed to retire. So when I got to the point that I could no longer serve, I was 2 years away from retirement. So they basically gave me a desk job for my last 2 years and allowed me to retire. But I wasn't, I was prohibited from reenlisting or anything due to my health. So.
I think it gives inspiration to people, because people, when they retire, I'm retired, need a purpose. And if you have a disability, sometimes people think, oh, I can't do anything. And you can. And you're an inspiration because you are writing. And that is, I think it gives people inspiration. Oh, well, you know what? I heard Lou Gray, and he's retired and disabled, and he wrote a book. So, yeah, I could try to write a book too. And I think that's important with retirement, is to find a purpose to do when you retire. Actually, I think about it before you retire, but I just, you know, you never know what life throws your way, that you might have to pivot.
When I first retired, I tried teaching for a little while, and I really loved that. I loved working with the kids. My health was such that I couldn't, it was destroying me. My doctors were like, yeah, you need to not do that. You need to take it easy. So I had to stop. And like I said, my wife was like, why don't you get back into writing, publish one of your stories? So pretty much the only one I could find. And I retired and I'm, you know, moved to my home I'm in now and everything. And I don't know what I did. Like, moving out of where I was in Japan when I retired and everything, and I just kind of threw stuff in boxes and you know, left, and I don't know where most of my stories and all that are. So I actually published the only one that I still had, but I still knew where it was, I should say.
So this is your first book, Lou?
Yes. My second book is getting formatted right now. The cover is done. The final form, I actually just got an email with the final format for my second book yesterday. So as soon as I approve that, so they're going to send me all the files so that I can then upload it and to Ingram and publish it. So hopefully my second book will be coming out sometime in February.
Oh, March. Okay. Did you want to spill any tea on that? Give a tease?
Well, sure. My second book is a far cry from my first book. The first one, historical fiction, and I stuck with the history as much as I could and made it as historically accurate as possible. The second one is pure fantasy. It's kind of a lit RPG light. I don't know if you've ever read any lit RPG or know what that is, but basically it's like writing like you were in a video game. So, you know, you're the main character in the book levels up and gets magic or whatever, just like he was in a video game.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's a pure escapist fantasy fun pop culture romp. It's got lots of movie references and music references, and it's just, I needed something at that time in my life just fun to do. So I had a good time writing it. And my third book, I'm in the middle of writing now. I went back to historical fiction, and I'm doing Genghis Khan.
Oh, that is, wow. You're like on a roll now, right?
I have plans for so many more.
That's wonderful. Well, I'll tell you what, you're more than welcome to come back on, you know, and discuss whatever book you would like. I think that it's great. I interviewed actually it's one of the Stress-Free Book Marketing's other clients. She was in her 80s and started writing a series of books. And, you know, it's just amazing. So, you know, if you're listening, if you're 70 or 80 years old, you're not too old to write a book, folks. You're not. Give it a, you know.
Didn't write a book till he was in his 50s.
Yeah, I mean.
I can't remember, something like that.
It's just incredible. I've interviewed a lot of authors that are in their 80s and still writing books. You know, age is just a number. If you could write, hey, power to you. I have to ask you, Lou, because I always ask all the authors this, because I'm just fascinated since doing my podcast and interviewing all different kinds of writers, of your writing process. What is your writing process like? And
well,
is it different with each book?
Yes, it is. The basic process is kind of the same, but when I was writing the Julius Caesar book, it's only like 97 pages, and I bought probably 50 or 60 books about Julius Caesar and about that period of Roman history and all that stuff, and I did so much research and basically just sandwiched the fiction into the history. So I didn't have to come up with a storyline. It was already there. I just had to make it my own. So that was a completely different process than my second book, which is pure fantasy. In the second book, I actually, and this is kind of a dirty word these days, but Neil Gaiman, I saw an interview with him years before he became a pariah. And he said when he's writing, he sits himself down in front of his computer, and he's allowed to either write or do nothing. He's not allowed to check emails. He's not allowed to talk on the phone. He's not allowed to do whatever. He can either stare at the ceiling and do nothing, or he can write. And that's what I did for my second book, is I took that page, and I would just go out to my computer and think about the story and where it was going, and then just start writing. And that was a really fun process, because it allowed me to just explore my pop culture influences, the things that I like about pop culture and music and those things, and just think about them and throw them down on the page. And that was really fun. Now that I'm doing Genghis Khan, I'm back up to, I'm already in the mid-20s about Mongolia, buying books about Mongolia and Genghis Khan and all that. So it's a similar process, but I like my historical fiction to be historically accurate. So there's so much, I guess, studying that goes into the writing, that it's almost,
yes,
two-thirds that, studying and one-third writing.
Yes. And I'll tell you, I tell all the authors this, because it's the truth. I never realized what went into writing a book till I started to interview authors, like research, the research alone. I mean, I've talked to people who some of their books took 8 to 10 years to write because of all the research. That's incredible. That's an incredible amount of time.
Yeah, my goal is to be able to put out 2 books a year. I'm hoping I can do one historical fiction, like well-researched book, and then one escapist, just fun book every year. My original goal was 3 a year, but since I've decided I want to keep doing historical fiction, I knocked it back down to 2, because it just takes so much work to
yes,
get accuracy in the history.
That's interesting. I like that you do escape fantasy and historical fiction mixed with, nonfiction, and I think that's you must be very creative to do that. I admire, really, authors and writers, because it's like I know what I want to say in my head, but I have trouble from my head to my hand and writing it down on paper. So I'm amazed whenever, I read a book, the dialogue. How do you come up with your dialogue with your characters? That just fascinates me every time I read a book.
The dialogue to me has always been the hardest. It's just a nightmare, or was. Like, I always just struggled with it when I was just writing for myself. And I was always really good at coming up with the story in my head, with the idea of it starts here, it goes there. This is the fantastical world I want it to be in. But then to have the people interact was such a struggle. And I don't know what finally popped, because my books always, my stories, like when I shared them with people close to me, they're always like, oh, this is really good. You should flesh it out. It's almost like this is the synopsis of your story. You should flesh it out with more detail and conversation and all that. And that's where I've always struggled. And I don't know what happened, like even with when I was writing To End the Night with Julius Caesar, I struggled a lot. Like, there's a lot, like I'm doing Genghis Khan now, which was around 1200 AD, and Julius Caesar was like 50 BC. So that even with that big time gap, there's a lot more detailed information on the life of Julius Caesar than there is on the life of the younger life of Genghis Khan anyway. So for Julius Caesar, I had a lot of actual conversation, or, books written by Julius Caesar himself and by his contemporaries. So I was able to take real world, real words that were recorded that he had said, or at least people said he said, and kind of mess with the conversation that way. But then when I was writing my second book, I don't know what happened. I just started, like, the dialogue started coming. And seems to be that way now that, I guess, practice. All of this is a lot of words to say practice. Practice is eventually dialogue just started working for me.
And that's a good point to bring out, Lou, because, you know, I'm sure that every writer might get writer's block or have difficulty, you know, trying to figure out dialogue, but that as a saying goes, practice makes perfect. The more you write, I'm sure it comes easier to you, or maybe not.
Definitely. You know, the more I write, the easier dialogue becomes, and the easier it is to, you know, instead of one page going 3 days, it's now 3 pages take 1 day. You know what I mean? It's getting that in there. I think the best thing I ever did was just take one of my stories and send it to an editor. Because my editor, I'm going to stick with the same guy forever. His name is Andy with Cup and Quill. He's amazing. And the feedback that he gave me when I turned in that book was so specific. Like, this doesn't make sense and this is why. This is a suggestion for how it can make sense. And his feedback was so good and so specific that it really just allowed me to open up and write more and write better. And I think anybody that's struggling, like they don't think their book's good enough, if you have the money, and it's not cheap, editing is expensive. It's usually per word and, you know, depending on the level of editing, it can be quite expensive. But it's worth every penny if you get a good editor that gives you that quality feedback, that it can really just change and unlock potential that you didn't know you had. So as long as you're not someone that gets offended by feedback, and if you are someone that gets offended by feedback, I would say don't become a writer. But if you're someone that doesn't get offended by feedback, just write it and send it to an editor and let it unlock, because the process is amazing.
That's a great advice. And how did you pick out an editor? And are you self-publishing? Are you a self-publisher?
Yes, I am. So I Googled book editors, and I think I came up with, I can't even remember the name of the website now that I found Linda on. Linda is the woman that owns Cup and Quill. I believe that she is a college professor, and she has people, all of the editors working for her, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they're mostly master's and PhD students that work for her that do the editing, and some other PhD, like professor type people that want a little income on the side and they do this editing. But I just found a website that I'm embarrassed that I can't remember the name of the website, but it was one of those,
that's okay,
you know, freelance whatever websites. And Cup and Quill was actually the first people I contacted, and Linda called me and said, you know, like, hey, this is what we do, this is how much it costs, this is whatever. And I Googled, like, average prices, and her price per word was in the average price range. So I was like, all right, I'll give it a go. And she farmed it out to Andy, who I believe just got his master's in English and writes himself. But like I said, my experience was so amazing working with Andy that I just don't have any desire. Someone else That might just be the experience of working with an editor, period. It might just be that good. But he won my loyalty with the quality of his feedback. You know, I don't want anyone else editing my books. He's amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's understandable. If you have a good experience and, you know, the person works well with you and for you, I wouldn't see any reason to go, you know, anywhere else. I think that a lot of people who are beginning of their writing career don't realize how expensive it is to get a book, you know, edited, published. People, you know, sometimes they hire a publicist, sometimes they don't, or a marketing company. And, you know, it really helps get your book out there. How did you go about choosing your marketing company?
Your book out there. Ingram Spark is the, I guess, the standard book distribution company. That's where most bookstores and stuff order their books from, is from Ingram. And so after I wrote my book, Linda recommended a friend of hers with something called Inicio Press. And Inicio Press's, I guess, tagline or whatever is taking the self out of self-publishing. So you get your book back from the editor, you send it to Inicio Press, and they go through and format it in the format it needs to be for the book. They add the proper front matter and, you know, copyrights and ISBNs and all that kind of stuff. And then for me, I'm self-publishing it. Inicio Press will actually put it on Amazon and send it to Ingram and everything for you. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do that part on my own. So they just do the turning my manuscript into the proper files needed to be a book. And then I went to Ingram, uploaded everything, went to Amazon, uploaded everything. And Ingram has all kinds of tools to help authors. And in there they have recommendations like this company or this whatever. And that's what I did. That's how I got a hold of Rick Light. And I guess as an author, like, I don't know my way around the book world. I don't know my way around the publishing industry. And Rick is kind of helping me navigate that, learn what I need to do. So I'm not sure, like, I probably, if you had a full-time publicist or something, it would be a different experience. But with Rick and his company, it's they help me send my book out to people that might do reviews and that kind of stuff. And that's the big thing, because if you don't get reviews, people don't want to buy your books. People don't want to see, oh, here's a new book that has zero reviews. So that's been the biggest help. I found him on Ingram Spark, stress-free book marketing. And, you know, he put me in touch with you to have this interview. And he mostly just getting my book in front of book clubs and things, places that will want to read it and do reviews. Before I had contacted Stress-Free Book Marketing, I think I had 3 or 4 reviews from people that weren't family members, and now I have like 15, which doesn't sound a lot, but it's more than I was getting on my own, like by a lot. So
yeah, that's, you gave like great advice, because, and folks, I just interviewed Rick Light like the other day, so you know, go on Patch World Talk Radio Network.com and you could see the interviews. And it's just it must be an incredible experience. But I have, you know, interviewed many authors, and they usually do have a marketing company or a publicist. And a lot of authors don't want to do that. I've spoken to people who like, oh, you know, I can't afford it. I know it's expensive. But I think sometimes you have to spend money to make money because a marketing company or publicist can get you on, you know, magazines and podcasts and maybe even, you know, TV shows eventually. But, you know, you really need that, I think, initial, I want to say push, but that initial publicity for to promote yourself. And I also highly tell these authors and writers, you know, you have to be out there hustling your book. You have to be sharing whatever show you're on. You have to share the show. You know, go to book fairs. Even give out samples of your book or a copy. If it's, I always say, if you're writing a children's book, what better publicity than to go to a preschool or kindergarten, you know, and say, hey, here's a sample of my book, or, you know, let me know what you think. Or even your public library. I don't know if they take that, but to get your book out there. And, of course, social media is very important. Excuse me. To get your book out there. Because I always... Go ahead, Lou.
I was just going to say, the biggest thing for me is just learning what is effective and what isn't. And that's worth every penny that I've spent. It's way more than I can afford. And I won't do it with my second book, and I probably won't do it with my third book, because I just don't have the money to keep paying a marketing company.
Right.
But before I worked with Rick, I did things like, oh, well, I need reviews. I knew kind of on my own, you know, I need reviews. People need to see reviews. So I contacted onlinebookclub.org, which they offer, you know, reviews for money, but they say, you know, no promises. You might get a bad review, whatever. And I tried them and a few other companies, and I got some reviews that cost me quite a bit of money. And I don't want to disparage onlinebookclub.org, but I just really don't think that their reviews and their what they're doing is effective, and I would never pay for that again. You know, but I did find, you know, Rick turned me towards other avenues to get reviews that are far more effective and much cheaper than all of these websites. If you Google how to get reviews for your book, you know, so that on its own, I think, is important for any author. If you want to, you know, if you just want to write a book and self-publish it and put it out there, you can do that pretty cheap. You can do all of that on your own. But if you really want to make a living as an author, which I'm not, by the way, not even close, but if you want to make a living as an author and you want to, I've decided that there's no replacing the expense of working with an editor, of getting someone to help you do a professional cover for your book, of having a book marketing company or somebody with that experience kind of walk you through how to do a lot of these things, because it's not intuitive. It's not something that any of us deal with on a regular. It's, you know, and in the traditional publishing industry, you write your manuscript, you send it out to a million different places, and it's out there for, if you're super lucky, a couple days, and someone snaps it up and pays you, and yeah, let's do this book. But let's be honest, most of us could send manuscripts out to 50 different places, and it could be out there for years before anybody picks up your manuscript. With self-publishing, the gratification is it's out there. It's out there. But you have to do all the work yourself, and you have no idea how to do it. So the only way to navigate that, in my opinion, is at least the first time, suck it up and pay for it. You know, I basically cashed in my entire life savings and bet on myself that I can do this. And my wife and I set the money aside, you know, cashed in my life savings, fixed up the house a little bit, set the money aside for, okay, this is the book publishing money, and we're going through it. But the process of learning and getting my book in front of people has been phenomenal. And the learning experience, just something,
yes.
You know, it's like a college education. It's not cheap, but it's worth it.
Yeah, you bring out a lot of good points, Lou. I mean, you have to sometimes, like I said, you know, spend money to make money. And if you don't know, if someone doesn't know what to do, I would recommend, you know, doing what you did and to learn, you know, and then maybe you won't need as much help the next time because you know, have the experience. But to initially get your foot in the door, but get your book out there. And you bring up another important point, and I really want to encourage the audience. If you read a book, folks, whatever book you read, go do a review and help your author out. If you like an author, you like the way they write their book, go on Goodreads, go on Amazon, or wherever they recommend, and do a review. It's important. It's very important. Sometimes Amazon lets me do a review. Most of the time they do, even though I haven't purchased the book, but I was sent the book from the author or from the publishing company. And, you know, it really, I mean, helps the author out. It really does. And yeah. I know it's a competitive market. You know, you go to any bookstore, or if you even go to, you know, any, I guess, book place online, that's a competitive market. And I always say, what do you look at? What catches your eye when you look at a book to make you pick it up? It's the cover. It's the title. Yeah. It's the cover. Does it catch your eye? And I think I like your cover of the Julius Caesar book. I think that's eye-catching. I like it.
That was 100% the folks over at Inicio Press. They asked me if I had any ideas for the cover, and I was like, something with Julius Caesar on it. So that was another important, you know, like, I don't think I could have published that book, but that, you know, they provided the, Inicio Press provided the cover and the formatting and the blurb on the back about the book and all the things that, as an author, like, I don't really know what's good copy for the back of a book. I don't know, you know, all these things that you don't think about that are just kind of there when you get a book. It's,
yeah,
to me, the experience of paying other people to do it. You know, I might eventually stop using Inicio Press and start formatting my own books and everything if I learn, you know, the right way to do that and all that. But being able to have someone else do it and know that it's done right to get your first few books out there is priceless. You know, you can't put a price on that.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, if it gives you satisfaction and you enjoy it and it inspires you, you know, keep doing it. I always say, look how many times J.K. Rowling was turned down and for her manuscript. And now look at her, right? Multimillionaire.
Yep.
I bet those book publishing places are kicking themselves in the rear end for rejecting her. And as like with anything else, it's a learning process. And you learn as you go along. But there's a lot, and I always like to tell the audience this, there's a lot that goes into writing a book. Which I found out in doing the show that there's a lot involved, and I really admire authors and writers. I think that it's such a time-consuming career that you could spend, you know, years on a book, and you hope, you know, it becomes a bestseller, but you know, you still put that time in, and I really appreciate. I do. I appreciate authors and writers, and I want to thank you, Lou, for coming on today. I enjoyed talking to you, and I wish you the best. How can people get in touch with you, Lou?
Well, I have lougrayauthor.com, and again, that's LLUEWGREY author.com, and Lou Gray Author on Facebook, Lou Gray on Instagram, Lou Gray Author on Blue Sky, Lou Gray on Goodreads. what else?
You're all over. How about where can they purchase the book?
It's on Barnes & Noble, it's on Amazon, or they can go straight to, I think, let me go to my website and take a look. I'm not sure if I have it up there or not. LouGrayAuthor.com.
Because I always guess. Some authors like for people to purchase on their website. Some say, you know, Amazon. So I always ask.
So I don't have anything up right now, but I will get busy and put links up to buy direct from me on my website. It's actually, you know, I'm not going to package the books and all that. It's links to Ingram Spark, to buy directly from Ingram Spark instead of going through Barnes & Noble or Amazon or any, you know, my book's available anywhere that uses, you can even go to your local bookstore and ask them to order it and they can order it. But I will put a link on my webpage with a discount because the current book is $11.99 if you get it from Amazon. I will put it for $9.99 on my website. So anybody that goes to my website can buy it direct for a couple bucks cheaper. And I'll go ahead and do that for all my books as they come out. Now that I think about it, I'll put links up on my website that if you click the link, it'll take you to Ingram and you can purchase it from them for a little bit of a discount if you bother going to my website and buying it.
Oh, okay. That's great. Well, Lou Gray, really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story, your experiences, and I wish you the best in all your endeavors, and you're more than welcome to come back when your other books are out there.
Let me ask you real quick.
Sure.
Did you read my book?
No, because I didn't get a copy.
You didn't get a copy? Oh.
No.
I will have to send it to you. I didn't realize you
didn't
get a copy.
No, I didn't get a copy. I try to read books. I do, folks. I try to read a book when I get the copy, but I didn't get the copy. But, you know, I could do an interview with someone without reading their book, but I like it better when I have read the book myself, personally.
Well, I tell you what, I would love to come back on, and I will send you a free copy of not only this book, but my second book when it comes out. And we'll do this again sometime.
Oh, awesome. You know what? I tell people, I know people might think, oh, Betsy, you're a little cuckoo, you're a different kind of host than I am. I'm just being me. Folks, I never expected to interview authors. Never. I mean, if somebody would have told me, oh, Betsy, you're going to interview people and you're going to be interviewing, you know, all these different kinds of people, I would have said, you're nuts. There's no way I'm doing that. And here I am doing it for 5 years, almost five and a half.
That's awesome.
So you never know, folks, where life is going to take you and what you're going to be doing. Take it from me and Lou, right? You never know.
That's right.
You'll be doing, really. Sometimes you have to pivot. And And I did. I was worked as a nurse, and because of my eyesight, and I didn't want to kill anybody by accident, give the wrong prescription medication, wrong dosage, I had to leave it. I had to leave nursing because of my eyesight. And I had to pivot. So that's what, you know, you have to do. So I went to do, you know, other jobs. And I just want to thank you again. I enjoyed talking to you, Lou Gray. And folks, check out Lou Gray. Go on his the Amazon page. The link will be in the blog. All the information about Lou Gray will be in the blog that Jeannie White, station manager, writes and produces the show. And I want to thank Lillian Caldwell, who makes this all possible, the CEO of Passion World Talk Radio Network. And I want to thank you, the listeners. Thank you for listening, subscribing, sharing. Please share this show to help other people. And you could follow me on Facebook, Betsy E. Wurzel, W-U-R-Z-E-L. And if you're looking for a support group, hashtag KICK, Alzheimer's Ask Movement on Facebook. And as I always say at the end of my show, in a world where you can be anything, please be kind, shine your light bright, because we need it now more than ever before. This is Betsy Wurzel. You're a host of Chatting with Betsy on Passion World Talk Radio Network, a subsidiary of Global Media Network, LLC. Bye-bye now.